whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Here we go. It's hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Let's go back to the stadium as we have from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, a Cowboys writer, a football writer extraordinaire, really, Nick Harris joining you here on 105.3 The Fan. And good afternoon, Nick. How the heck are you?
Doing pretty good. I think it took a couple calls to reach me. I was trying to pack some AT&T Stadium mac and cheese. You guys know the priorities around here.
Oh, yeah, that's perhaps the best mac and cheese in the world, but it's good to know you're already there. Can you set the scene for us? Is this home field advantage, or does this have a neutral site type of feel based on who's there already?
Well, the fans haven't been let in the door yet. I believe that happens at 4:30, but I can kind of already see them lining up outside the gates. But just with the way travel has been with the snowstorm and everything, and a lot of Ohio State fans trying to shed on their tickets that they weren't able to get a flight in this morning, I'm anticipating a pretty heavy Texas crowd today. But also don't be surprised if Ohio State shows up too. There's a lot of DFW Ohio State grads in general, so at least those guys will show up.
Now, where do you approach this as a reporter slash fan and a football guy that grew up here in Texas? Are you pulling Longhorns tonight, or is that against your football code?
Really, no, just covering it media wise. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. I did my first 2 years at the University of Texas, so you know there's always going to be a little bit of partial there. I'd be lying if I'd said that there wasn't. But the Cotton Bowl, it's a playoff semifinal. Two teams with a lot of kids that I used to cover in the high school days in the recruiting ranks on both of these teams. Jeremiah Smith, you know, almost certainly will be a generational draft prospect here in a couple of years. So that's a guy to take a look at. There's a lot of different angles I could take from this.
I just want the fans to be happy myself. You know, I love it when people are fired up about football in our audience, but I'm not sure how confident we should feel. I mean, Quinn Ewers was so clutch to close out that game, but that came after the pick to put the Sun Devils back in it. So how confident are you in this Texas offense and specifically Quinn Ewers?
You know, I think Ohio State and Texas have the same exact problem. You don't know what version of the team is going to show up. And I think if the right version of the team shows up and the wrong version shows up of another team, that'll spell your result. But I think if you get the right version of both teams, you get the right version of Quinn Ewers, who is decisive. He doesn't panic under pressure. He gets out of the pocket and is able to make some throws on the run. He's still a really talented guy. He's got arm talent that NFL scouts will love whenever he does decide to enter, whether that be this year or if he portals and goes somewhere next year. There's going to be a lot of love for what he can do in a combine type setting. But for me, it's him panicking under pressure. And if this Ohio State defensive line, led by Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, Tyleek Williams, if these guys can get after the quarterback, it could make life really difficult for Ewers.
Hey, yeah, and that, Nick, that's what I was going to ask you. Who has the bigger responsibility tonight, Texas offensive line or their secondary?
Oh, that's a good one. I would have to put the offensive line, just because if you can get after Will Howard from the defensive line perspective, then I think you can limit some of those things that you're having to ask the secondary to do. And granted, that secondary is really talented. You got a Jim Thorpe Award winner and Jahdae Barron. You got a couple of really talented guys, a second team All-American and Michael Taft at safety. You also have Malik Muhammad, South Oak Cliff grad, who's coming back to Dallas today to play in this game. And he's really excited about this one. So I trust that secondary. I think if the pass rush can get home, but I think there's more that you're asking from the offensive line, just because there's so many guys up there in that defensive front for Ohio State. But you look at it from Texas offensive line's perspective, they have so much experience up there. Mm-hmm. You have guys 1 through 5, left tackle to right tackle, that have played multiple seasons as a starter here, or not here, but in Austin. And they're going to take that experience to the field. Their right tackle, Cam Williams, who has started to emerge as a first-round type of name. I don't know if I love him that much, but I think he has certainly had a phenomenal year at Texas playing a right tackle. He will be back playing in this game. He did not play in the Peach Bowl against Arizona State as he was dealing with a knee issue, but he'll be back for this one. So they'll have a fully healthy offensive line, and they're going to need it because this is going to be an absolute war in the trenches.
I think he should be back playing at Texas next year personally. I think he could use some more seasoning, but that's a draft show conversation, Nick. I do want to ask you about these two head coaches, Ryan Day and Steve Sarkisian. Sark's kind of been rumored maybe to get some NFL interest. I think that buyout is just way too high. There's no way that happens. But which one's under more pressure? Because you got Texas now, who's kind of the last remaining piece of the SEC. Like, they've got the entire SEC on their shoulders. And then Ryan Day, I've seen some people say he should just leave Ohio State, tell them to go bleep themselves. But then if he doesn't win, does he get fired by the school themselves.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more pressure on Ryan Day, because you look at what a loss could look at, like, for the reality of both of those coaches, and there's just going to be a lot more pressure on Day, because he's had the storyline around him that he cannot win the big game. Now, granted, going out and beating Oregon in the Rose Bowl, it really dispelled that theory, and I think they're heading in the right direction in that sense. Now, great, if they had lost in the first round of the playoffs and fell on their face against Tennessee, there's no question in my mind Ryan Day would be looking for a job right now. But he's won two really big games, beat Oregon in the Rose Bowl, an undefeated Oregon team, and now that he's gotten them here, I don't think it would be as bad as if he had lost against Tennessee or if he had lost against Oregon, but I think there still would be some of that narrative creeping back in the sense that Ryan Day cannot win the big game. And he's trying to dispel that theory along with his guys as well. Whereas Sark, you know, he's gotten them back to this exact same stage 2 years in a row. Could that narrative be out there? Maybe, but I don't think you have that narrative after only two seasons in the playoff.
Nick, I'm curious because I'm excited about this Texas secondary versus these wide receivers. Jeremiah Smith, you got Barron. I think Barron's a guy that could be an option for the Cowboys in the first round, as well as Igbuka, the other wide receiver for Ohio State. You get to pick either one of those two guys for the Cowboys at 12. We get to watch them tonight, maybe matching up one-on-one at times. Who would be your selection?
Oh, man, that's tough. I would have to go Jahdae Barron, just because you can use him in so many different ways. He's been a chess piece for Texas defensive coordinator Pete Kwiatkowski during his time in Austin. He's played at nickel. He's played outside corner. He's played safety. He's played in that star rover position that they like to use with a safety in the box. I mean, he has played everywhere in the secondary. I think that's a guy with so much experience in different roles and in different facets of a talented defensive scheme that Kwiatkowski has put together. It's a pro-type scheme. I think he would be the most pro-ready day one to step in pretty much any spot that the Cowboys would need, whether that be at nickel if they can't bring back Jordan Lewis, or at outside corner if Trayvon Diggs needs a little bit more time at the beginning of the season to get healthy, or at safety if they decide to move on from one of those two guys on the back end. I think there's a lot of flexibility that you would have with number 7.
Nick Harris offseason primer is up on the Star Telegram if you would like to read that. Now, are we just hammering out a deal with Mike, or do you feel like there's a good chance they go in a different direction?
I feel like there's a lot of steam moving towards getting a deal done. The two sides have talked a lot over the course of the last 72 hours. Now, it's more so about, you know, what has gone right, what has gone wrong. And then today is where the negotiations really kick off. And if they've come to this day and they've come to this type of conversation, then that means the last 72 hours they've agreed upon some things, and they both see a reality where it works with him staying in Dallas. And if you're asking me my gut feeling, I feel like it happens. I feel like they do get a deal done, and Mike McCarthy is back. Now, what will that look like? That's where the questions come into play. Is he still the offensive play caller? Are there different? Is there a completely different staff around him? What exactly does that look like? I think that's when we start getting into those type of nitty gritty questions. But I feel my mind starting to move on to those nitty gritty questions. I think McCarthy's going to be back, guys.
What's your read on Schottenheimer and the trust or the faith that the building has in him? And are there, like, obvious candidates internally or otherwise that would, you know, be the OC under Mike if that's the direction that it goes?
Yeah, I wouldn't lie to you, man. I don't really have a good feel on that. I feel like with all of these assistants, there's going to be a case-by-case circumstantial review done on all of those guys to feel and determine what that role could look like moving forward. Now, if McCarthy has moved on from as a play caller, then I would take that with the assumption that they would be looking outside of the building to bring another play caller in, or to elevate one of their young guys and try to give them an opportunity. I think there would be more of a Jones decision in that type of realm. But is there confidence in Brian Schottenheimer potentially doing that? It's tough for me to say, because he didn't get opportunities in the preseason to do that in the last 2 years, and he didn't have an opportunity this season. And whenever that idea was brought up to both Jerry and Mike during the season, they quickly shut that down. So, you know, all I can take is what they have said in the public record about Schottenheimer. But you talk to anybody in the building, everyone loves working with Schottenheimer. He's obviously a coach's kid. He brings a high pedigree to the building. He brings high knowledge to the building. I think he would still be a valued asset in Dallas.
I think he's going to end up in another team myself. I think he's looking for an OC job somewhere else.
That wouldn't surprise me.
If I had to guess. Nick, I want to go back real quick on the Texas game, if I could. And just how, I mean, you're going to be watching pregame with Bert Auburn kicking footballs for Texas, aren't we? I mean, if you're a Texas fan, do you have to be terrified for your kicking situation tonight in this game?
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's going to be a different guy handling the place kicking responsibilities. Will Stone, who is a graduate of Austin Regents High School down in the Austin area, he was recruited by special teams coordinator Jeff Banks, who's one of the better recruiters in the country, and developed, and he's handled their kickoff duties mostly throughout the season. It sounds like he's going to be handling place kicking duties, so it looks like they're moving off of Bert Auburn today.
Is this something that I missed in the news? Has this happened a couple days ago, or is this something
that's today?
It's a today development. It's a today development. You're all good.
Okay. Thanks, man. Appreciate the education.
Yeah.
Nick, when do you think we hear whether or not Zimmer's coming back, and who do you see filling in for him if he's not?
Yeah, that's a tough one, too, because that one's a little bit more convoluted, because what does Zimmer want to do? And, you know, he's talked about potentially, you know, hanging it up after the season. He just got engaged. Micah Parsons talked about, you know, him potentially riding off into the sunset, even though he wants him back for another year. It's a question that I think would have to be asked with a lot of foresight, because if Mike Zimmer wants to be back, and he's like, yeah, I'll go give it another round, then you're asking him to, hey, we need this to be a long-term situation, because you're about to extend Micah Parsons. You have Trayvon Diggs on this deal. You need continuity on that defense, because they've had three different coordinators in five seasons on that defensive side of the ball, and we're potentially looking at four different coordinators in six seasons. Whatever they decide to do in 2025 on the defensive side of the ball, it has to be done with some sort of certainty and finality as far as moving forward. Now, granted, you can't account for your guy getting plucked from another team as a head coach, so they it's not like they told Dan Quinn to walk out the door, but you would like to have some continuity, because you saw what the lack of continuity between coordinator to coordinator, you saw what that did early in the season in 2024. And whatever decision is made, you would just hope that there's some sort of, you know, foresight as far as, you know, keeping that person for the long term.
Nick, you mentioned Micah and getting that extension done. I know post-game he had talked about sitting with Jerry in the suite. He was just at the Orange Bowl last night. I don't know if the weather created some issue to get him to the game tonight, but what do you think the timeline is for that extension? Like, could we get that done this offseason?
Yeah, and Jerry seemed receptive towards, you know, Micah's idea of trying to get that done early, because Micah obviously has spoken to trying to get that deal done even before free agency, so that the team knows what they have to work with whenever that new league year hits on March 12th. And, you know, he's a guy that wants to bring back some of his defensive line free agents, like Osa Diezua, Chauncey Golston, Carl Lawson. And he knows that there will be more flexibility if that deal is done. Now, from ownership side of things and Jerry Jones and the front office, the ball's in their court. It's up to them to hammer out a deal. And it's a good point about Micah being at the Orange Bowl yesterday and with the travel and weather and everything, if he's able to make it to the Cotton Bowl today, but at least the desire to bring him in and have the conversation in Jerry's suite, I think that's a good sign toward, you know, them trying to work together to get this thing done in a timely manner, because there's no way, I don't think we would have seen that happen last year with Dak and or CD. And that's no discredit to Dak or CD or even the front office. It's just that they have moved on quick to trying to get this situation figured out. And the conversation also is not just going into contract negotiations with Micah Parsons. From what Jerry Jones said on Sunday, he said it's also a conversation just about, you know, what went wrong, what went right. Micah even talked about it in his postgame availability. He has a lot of things he wants to talk to Jerry about, just about the team. And I think that's a credit to, you know, Micah taking more of a role over the course of the last 6 months and trying to speak up on these types of things and being more involved. I think he understood the heat that he took for not showing up to offseason workouts until it was mandatory for him to do so. And I think he's trying to apply that a little bit differently this offseason.
Nick, teams that ran the ball well had unprecedented success making the playoffs. If you wanted to fix that with the Cowboys or make it even better, do you get Genty or do you go with an offensive lineman at 12 and then a runner later on?
I tell you what, you won't get an argument from me for Genty at 12, but I do think if it were me making the decisions, obviously I'm not qualified to do so, but if it was me making the decisions, I would wait to take a guy later on, just because this is such a deep running back draft. That's the only reason I can give you, is because I feel like you can go in the third, fourth, fifth round and get a productive back, a lot like how Tampa Bay did last year with Bucky Irving in the fourth round, how the Giants did with Tyrone Tracy in the fifth round last year. Like, there will be guys, especially in this draft, I think running back is arguably the deepest position in this draft, to be able to go grab a guy that can be productive for you later on. But if they grab Genty at 12, you won't hear an argument from me.
Well, how confident are you in the offensive lineman in this draft then?
Yeah, that's another question as well. Do you feel like you could get a competent offensive lineman in the second, third, fourth, fifth round? And that's why, if it were me, I would.
What about at 12?
Take a guy early
on. You think
you'd
get a guy at 12?
I think Kelvin Banks could be there. I think that's an option.
No, I agree with you.
There's still so
much
to unfold. I say that with the caveat. There's so much to unfold. We still have, you know, Kelvin Banks has a game to play today, potentially another one next Monday. We got Senior Bowl Combine. You know, a lot of these mock drafts, which I love looking at them this early on, don't get me wrong, but a lot of them will look a lot different between now and draft day. So, you know, you could look at a situation where, you know, Kelvin Banks might be going top five, or Will Campbell might be dropping to where the Cowboys could be picking at 12. But as it sits right now, I mean, I think Banks would be a legitimate option for you. And then, like you mentioned on the draft show, Brian, there's a lot of tackles that are playing guard at the next level.
Exactly.
So which one of those guys do you want to go grab? It could be an option, too.
Give it a month, and you're going to see Jahdae Barron and Mike Green just shoot up these mocks.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike Green is phenomenal. Edge rusher from Marshall. Yeah,
Mike Green at 12.
Go, Nick.
Just go ahead and put the card in and forget about it.
Hey, you predicted BB last year, so you going to ride with this one? Is this your guy?
Hey, I know Brian went ahead and gave him a pet cat sticker. I'm right there with you. Mike Green's got stuff you can't teach.
Love that.
Thank you, Nick. Enjoy the game and enjoy the entire football weekend, man. It should be paradise for you. Thanks so much for your insights.
Yeah, thanks, fellas. Y'all have a great one.
Salute. There he is, Nick Harris, Star Telegram, live from the stadium, getting set for Texas-Ohio State tonight, coming up in just over 2 hours now. Will Chambers is going to join you coming up at 4:45. We'll get more from him on that. But a top 10 at 4:20 is coming up next. Well, Chuck, what's in store?
Well, in honor of the Cotton Bowl, we got the top 10 Cotton Bowl games of all time. What is your favorite bowl game? Go ahead, 877-881-1053. Let's take a trip down memory lane. That's next.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. We're about 15 minutes from Will Chambers joining us from the stadium. We'll be talking Texas-Ohio State with you here with him. Time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 4:20. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Go online to frankelfirm.com. Here he is now, Zach with an H. Your Woolly Bully.
Thank you very much, General. And we do indeed have the top 10 Cotton Bowl games of all time. 877-881-1053. The Cotton Bowl's getting ready to kick off. This time it's a college football playoff semifinal. How sweet it is. But, yeah, I got some texts like just their favorite bowl games ever. And totally cool with that as well. USC, Texas, and the Rose Bowl from the 214. Michael Vick versus Peter Warrick. That Florida State, Virginia Tech game was epic. I believe that was a Sugar Bowl matchup, if I'm not mistaken, for the Natty. That's also from the 214. We've got a lot of good ones. I did see, man, PETA is apparently putting up a fight here. They've tried to urge SEC Commissioner Mr. Sankey.
This is about Bevo?
Yeah, they don't want Bevo there. They're like, don't let Bevo at AT&T Stadium. Okay, this isn't good for him. I mean, I think PETA just needs to stop. All right, Bevo is very, very well attended. He's very well kept. And if anything, it's the perfect place for him to be. All right, there's nothing Bevo loves more than watching his Texas Longhorns go ahead and compete. So, PETA, if you want to stand in the way of an animal's happiness and go basically against what you preach, then go for it. But that's a bleep move on your part to deprive that beautiful, beautiful horn of getting to watch his Longhorns in a college football playoff game.
Yeah, they always miss it, you know. I mean, just be happy we're not eating him, you know what I'm saying?
Damn right, PETA. I mean, look, if we were doing
Eric
that,
was looking for a menu item right there.
I get it. You know, I get it. And hey, if Eric was going to be in attendance, then I'd say, PETA, you're on to something. All right. I could see my guy trying to steal Bevo late. You know, it'd be like one of those hangover scenes where they're stealing Mike Tyson's tiger. Yeah. You know, Eric would be showing up there trying to steal the Longhorn, Bevo, and then cook him and make like God knows how many ounces of steak. But
yeah,
Eric and I aren't going to be there tonight.
Could you see Eric just on the sidelines with a pass? Just kind of standing there staring at Bevo the whole time
with a little barbecue sauce in my left hand.
Just kind of got
a knife and a fork.
Got you and Hurtado standing, our guys standing right next to him. You know, just kind of mapping that out. You know,
yeah, I would definitely have Brandon there alongside to really do it right. What do you think? I don't know if Bevo would like the taste of it, but don't you think they should be feeding him the Buckeye nuts or whatever just on the sidelines today, just by way of intimidation a little bit?
Yeah.
I'd hook a feed bag up to him, just nothing but Buckeyes in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go ahead and chew up those nuts. There you go, Bevo. You got it, bro. I do also want to give a shout-out to friend of the show. The couch charter himself, Jared Hannon, who is about to be at AT&T Stadium to watch his Texas Longhorns hopefully get a victory. So
hopefully they don't take a page out of his book and S the couch tonight.
Yeah. Jared, I hope you brought a change of pants because you might need them, especially if there's any field goals on the line. Although, I guess Bert's getting benched. Yeah. Seems like Bert's, you know, it's going to be the Stoney guy or Stone. So hopefully Texas can end up making some field goals. Man, you don't want it to come down to a field goal. Quinn, no. Just get the ball in the damn end zone. Mm-hmm. And then let's just go for two every time. Mm-hmm. Don't let the kicker on the field. And then you're fine. All right, let's get to the list. Top 10 Cotton Bowls of all time.
1968.
That's your number one Cotton Bowl?
Texas A&M beat Alabama as Gene Stallings beat Bear Bryant. I was 5 years old when it happened.
Oh, that's the one. You know what? Honorable mention.
Is it on the honorable mention list?
No, just kidding, Brian. It's
I think you missed
10.
It by a year, Brian.
It's number 10.
Is it number 10?
A&M 20, Alabama 16.
How about, okay, well, I go way, way back. LSU beat Arkansas one time in a Cotton Bowl, 7-3, I think it was. Eric was really excited about that day.
Yeah,
on the offense. Oh
my gosh! Yeah, 1966, LSU 14, Arkansas 7. That's number
okay, 14-7. Is it number? Is it
number three on the list? Arkansas, defending national champ, they're averaging 34 points, riding a 22 game win streak. None of that faced your LSU Tigers, who were 7-3, but they played their best game of the season when it mattered most.
There you go.
The Razorbacks scored on their first drive, but that was it. Tigers defense proved impressively stout, made a pair of short second quarter touchdown runs from Joe Labruzzo. Stand to pull off one of the green upsets. Great upsets, not green.
They're great.
It's
a, that'd be
it's
great
a great upset.
Upset.
Yeah. It's a great upset as they were smoking that bowl in the Cotton Bowl.
How about Texas A&M? They beat Auburn 1 year in the Cotton Bowl?
A&M beating Auburn, is that in the top 10? It is not, Brian Broaddus. Dang it, it's not. And I don't think that one's...
Bo Jackson was in that Cotton Bowl, too, I think.
Yeah, that one's not even on here as an honorable mention. We did get some of the recent ones that did make it as honorable mentions.
How about Notre Dame beating Houston?
Notre Dame Houston, I think, is in the top 10.
Okay, that would be Joe Montana. Like, he got hypothermia during the game.
Yeah,
it was down 25 points or something like that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I don't know. Was it that much? I think it was, but he was, his body temperature was down like 25 degrees.
Okay, Brian, this is number one. 1979.
I was at the game.
Notre Dame 35, Houston 34.
Was at the game.
Played in during the after effect of an ice storm.
Yeah.
Game time temp was a brisk 22 degrees with a wind chill in the neighborhood of minus 10.
No, and I had terrible gear on that day.
Oh,
terrible
my
gear.
Goodness.
Yeah, I was there.
But yeah, you've got Joe Montana kicking ass, Irish kicker. Joe Eunice.
Yeah.
Was forced to retry his extra point attempt following a penalty and converted again for the winning margin as Notre Dame won that game. Number one. That is crazy.
Yeah, the Irish were down 34-12 in that game.
Okay.
I found it. Yeah, okay, 22 points.
Dawson
wow, unbelievable.
Yeah, Joe Montana gets hypothermia during the game. I mean, I think I had hypothermia too and stayed through it.
Dude,
man.
That's an amazing pull from you right there. Pulling number one on this list, courtesy of Yard Barker. That's outstanding.
I mean, but shouldn't number one really be Texas completing the perfect season here in 69?
Yeah, I would think that 69 could. I'm surprised that one didn't make it number one. I don't think that one is even in necessarily.
Because it was a boat race, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a.
That's
a
probably
blowout.
Why. That's probably why, because it just wasn't a good game. Like, they're just going like the tight games here. Honorable mentions though, the recent ones. You had Arkansas beating K State in 2012, 29-16. That was the last time Arkansas was like really, really good. You had Wisconsin over Western Michigan in 2017. I think that was Cooper Rush quarterbacking that Western Michigan team. Corey Davis, if you remember, one of the big busts in the top 10 at wide receiver.
That was played at Jerry World, right?
Yeah.
What year you said that was?
2017.
17, okay.
That was when it switched over. You've got 2004, Ole Miss.
Oh, they beat Oklahoma State?
Yep, that was Eli Manning and the Ole Miss Rebs. And Rashawn Woods, the outstanding wide receiver.
Where's Tulane and USC in this thing?
Tulane and USC is also one of the honorable mentions.
Get out of here. That game.
I know.
With a
no,
great
I'm just
upset.
Kidding. That one's in the top 10, Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Don't you worry. Sorry. We'll get to it. Okay, so number nine is BYU 19, Kansas State 15. Why does this one maybe mean more tonight? Steve Sarkisian.
No.
Was the quarterback of BYU, current Texas coach, and go-ahead touchdown, 3:59 to play, 28-yarder, hits his receiver in the corner of the end zone and is able to lead the Storm and Mormons back 19-15, get a victory over K-State. Eight, we go to 1984. This is a big game for me because it's the reason I'm as big of a football fan as I am. Errol Hebker, my grandfather, immigrated from South Africa this year to the United States, and one of his fellow work colleagues took him to his first ever NFL football game, or just football game, American football game. It's the Cotton Bowl, 1984. Georgia 10, Texas 9.
Oh, yes, it's Kevin Butler with the game-winning field goal, and they fumbled a punt.
Yes.
I was in stands for that one, too.
And he fell in love with the game.
Texas fumbled a punt that cost him the game. Yeah.
John Lastinger, the quarterback from Georgia, found his way in the end zone from 17 yards out. Bulldogs defense then were able to hold on. The Bulldogs defense. But, yeah, my grandfather became a diehard football fan, got season tickets to the Cowboys all because of that game right there, fell in love with the sport. Tulane, USC's number 7, 46-45. My guy Tajay Spears, huge game, 205 rushing yards as the Green Wave took down the Trojans. 1980, Houston over Nebraska, 17-14.
Running the veer.
Yeah, entertaining fourth quarters in the game's history. It was tied at 7 after 3.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had Tom Osborne and the Cornhuskers end up losing that day to the Cougs.
Yeah.
5 is 2015. Mm. Michigan State 42, Baylor 41.
Oh, that was a crazy game.
Really good back-and-forth game. Bryce Petty, the quarterback for Baylor that day. Connor Cook. 17 seconds left. Touchdown pass to Keith Mumphrey. Number 4, 1970, Texas 21, Notre Dame 17. Joe Theismann.
Yeah.
Quarterbacking that day for Notre Dame, and the Horns were able to defeat them. Billy Dale's 2-yard touchdown dive with 108 put the Horns up ahead, ultimately claimed a victory and a national title by winning that. 3 was 66, LSU over Arkansas 14-7.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, 1971, Notre Dame 24, Texas 11. The Fighting Irish got their revenge in the rematch over Texas. Winners of 30 in a row were the Longhorns. Notre Dame scored the following 21 points after Texas got up 3-0. Joe Theismann, an efficient 9 of 16.
Yeah.
For 176 yards.
He was 9 of 16 for the day?
Yep, for the day.
For the day.
How the times have changed, huh? But number one, you called it, Brian. It was Notre Dame 35, Houston 34 back in 1979. What an amazing bowl, and hopefully tonight maybe they can put themselves on the top 10 list of the greatest Cotton Bowls ever.
Thank you, Wolchuk. A fantastic top 10 at 420, and so appropriate here as we continue to count down to kickoff. Will Chambers joins us live from the stadium next here on The Fan. All righty, thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. I got my money deposited onto my very legal online betting account. I'm ready to rock. I'm thinking about parlaying this thing. I'm getting Texas plus 6 with the under at 51.5. Okay, that's what I'm thinking going into this as we head back out to the stadium where Will Chambers is live, getting set to take it all in now in less than 2 hours. And a good afternoon, Will. How the heck are you?
Boys, are we ready to have some fun tonight or what?
Yes.
I mean, how good is this? I mean, we have got the two teams that through the start of the college football playoff have been offensively, for the most part, on fire. And I know at times Texas has been a little bit shaky, but, you know, I think this is the matchup that throughout most of the year a lot of people were hoping at some point was going to happen in the playoff, and it's here in our backyard. And I'll tell you this, let me set the scene a little bit, because I'm standing on the 25-yard line. I come out of the elevator. I don't know exactly, I have limited field access, but as you boys know, I'm going to find out how limited it is. And I walk out of the elevator, and I actually walk out onto the field with the Texas Longhorns, who had literally just gotten off the bus. I was right in front of Jahdae Brown and Elijah Bond as they came out and very, very well dressed. And in the elevator on the way down, some chatter, some talk from some Texas beat writers that there may be a change in the lineup for the Longhorns. So the kicking situation may be a little bit different at game time. Just throwing it out there, that's something I overheard.
I love it. I love it. Will Chambers giving you the inside scoop there from the stadium, riding elevators with the players, walking onto the field with them. This is outstanding, Chambers. Now, I was talking about this game and my desire to bet it here tonight in the opening segment. You said don't put anything down till we hear from each other. So what do you got for us on this? And what do you think of my parlay here? Texas plus six with the under. What do you say?
Well, before I tell you about what I think of Ohio State and how they're going to win this in the national title, let me qualify it with that Texas matches up with Ohio State defensively. Texas on the defensive end. It'll be the best matchup that they've had all year, I would say, but in particular from what we've seen from them over the last couple weeks. Zach, I've heard you talking about it. When you think about the defensive backs, I mean, it's not just about, you know, Jahdae Brown. You know, they're awfully good on that back end with Tafe Mukuba. But, and also, Zach, what I thought you mentioned just to start out the show was right as well. If they can get after Will Howard and get him on the ground, that could be a big thing. This game is going to be huge in the first quarter because of how fast Ohio State has gotten out to their leads. Against Tennessee, you know, 21 points in the first three possessions. Against Oregon, you know, we all know what we saw. And I don't know if Texas will be able to keep up with Ohio State if they do indeed get out to that, you know, big lead that we've seen them do over the last few weeks. This team, I am so reminiscent, not of the team, but really of the playoff in 2019. LSU was the best team all year, but they were really playing their best football going into the playoffs, and they smoked Oklahoma. And then they went on to just, you know, pretty much blow out. I mean, I think it was only 17, but the game was really not even that close with Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. And Brian, I know you know that team well, and I'm not here to tell you that Will Howard is Joe Burrow.
Right.
But the way that they're playing, the way that they look against the competition that we've seen, that is what it reminds me of. And if Ohio State gets on the board in their first three possessions and it's 17 points or greater, I don't know how Texas is going to be able to keep up.
So you like Ohio State minus six, it sounds like.
I like Ohio State minus 13, to be honest.
Wow. It's quite a pick here from Will Chambers. Now, apparently you don't have a lot of faith in Quinn Ewers.
I think that Quinn had a terrific game, honestly, last week against Arizona State. I think that a lot of what we talk about with him is inconsistency. I actually see the opposite. The reason why it's inconsistent is because he's easy to pick off if you know where the direction of the offense and the play is going. He throws a lofted football, one that has a lot of air underneath it. He doesn't really drive the football. So that's where you saw that pick in the second half. But I thought his decision-making, I thought some of the other plays that he made, and with his arm, he played really well. But Will Howard has been the best quarterback in the college football playoff. And I think if you are forcing Texas to go away from the running game, that's really, really going to hurt them. And then I think it's going to put Quinn in a very difficult position in which he's going to throw multiple picks, get Caleb Downs in the middle of that secondary for Ohio State that is maybe the best in the country.
Will Chambers spitting knowledge live on the 25-yard line at AT&T
Let's
Stadium
go, baby.
As we get you ready,
I mean,
for the Cotton Bowl.
The atmosphere here is absolutely electric. I you know, this is why we get into this business, boys, and I'm telling you right now, I hope I'm wrong about the early start and that this is just a heavyweight fight.
No, I think a lot of the stuff you're saying is amazing. I'm happy you're there representing us. I wonder, what's the fan looking like right now when it comes to, like, Ohio State representation, Texas representation? I didn't know if the weather might have hurt some of the Buckeye fans that were traveling trying to get to DFW.
I thought about the same thing, man. And, you know, going out to Pasadena and then Dallas and then possibly Atlanta, I mean, that's a lot, you know, on a fan base. I will say that Dallas is the easiest place to get to, you know, for the most part in the country, and some of the cheaper flights. So maybe that was going to temper things. From what I've seen right now inside the building, the Longhorn fans are here. I'm seeing a lot of burnt orange. I see some scarlet and gray, not as much yet, but on the outside coming in, maybe the reason why I don't see them here is because the quote-unquote best damn band in the land was out in a place that you guys know very well, the Miller Lite West Plaza of AT&T Stadium. They were out there performing, so might be a little late coming in. And the tailgating, limited from what I saw, parking in lot 11 and on my way in because I just came straight in, definitely a lot more Ohio State than I saw with Texas. But that's just on that, you know, how I had to get in. I didn't travel around the entire building.
Will Chambers here with you in the G-Bag Nation. Okay, Will, before we let you go, thoughts on the NFL wild card weekend. Do you have any heat against the spread for us there?
Yes, and it's all written down upstairs in the media, in the press box.
Texans, Chargers, Ravens, Steelers?
I'm not a big fan of how the Steelers have been playing defense as of late, and I know that there's no Zay Flowers for Baltimore. I still get a feeling that, you know, Lamar is really dialed in to change the narrative around him in the playoffs. I really like Baltimore. The Rams are one that I was I'd say the one that I really like was giving the points to Denver. Denver's defense is pretty salty, Bo Nix, the way that I think Detroit played Buffalo is similar to how Sean Payton wants to play them. So I believe Buffalo is going to win, but I really, really like Denver in the points.
A lot of people do as well. That line is coming down a bit throughout the afternoon. Will, you get to be at that game tonight. And maybe we'll get to check in with you a little bit later on to see how it is setting up. The kickoff at 6:30, just over 90 minutes now until the college football semifinal. Will Chambers, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, you got it. I'll send you some updates, guys.
Cheers. There he goes. Thank you. Man, what an absolute beast. It's great to have him on the squad. Okay, an addition of the finest coming up next, Chief. Where are you taking us?
Yes, let's prep our bodies for Wild Card Weekend. Who's got the most pressure for the Wild Card Weekend matchups this weekend? That's next year in the nation.